Sunny skies at 85 degrees. Welcome to this Thursday edition of Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. We'll begin with this. Georgia regulators will decide next February whether or not to continue with Plant Vogtle. Of course, that is the troubled nuclear plant expansion project. Now, earlier this week, the Georgia Public Service Commission voted to approve the schedule for a round of hearings on spending at the plant. Now, during these hearings, Georgia Power will get the chance to make its case to keep the project going. Now, that's despite years of delays and, of course, escalating costs. Costs that are going into the billions of dollars. Joining me now on the line to talk more about this is Georgia Public Service Commission Chairman Stan Wise. Chairman Wise, welcome back to Closer Look.
Well, thank you again, Rose.
I know you don't like to hear the term troubled nuclear plant expansion. Does that bother you when you keep hearing that and reading that?
Rose, I think it's accurate. It is troubled. It has been budget delays and cost overruns, and it is of grave concern to the folks that regulate, to the folks that are building, and I believe ultimately to all Georgians that we have these delays and cost associated with it.
Let's get some clarity for our listeners. You all will now make a decision basically about the future of Plant Vogtle in February, correct? But in the meantime, does that mean construction continues, right? It's not going to stop.
Yes, ma'am, it does. And the filing made by Georgia Power and its partners was to continue the plant, and it would be extraordinarily expensive to stop and then start again, and it would be one of those hurdles that we just could not overcome if we, in fact, stopped construction at this point.
You mentioned hurdles, and one could argue, well, listen, you all didn't know the Westinghouse and Toshiba, that whole debacle. You all had no idea that was coming. How frustrating has this been, Chairman?
Rose, it's been one of those tough ones. We did not expect the year that we've had here at the Public Service Commission and to have these issues that we faced with the Westinghouse bankruptcy. So it was bad and tough that we've had to deal with it. But ultimately, the commission will review the filings made by the partners and ultimately determine whether it is appropriate to continue this project so that it can benefit, ultimately, the ratepayers that have paid significant monies to date.
You know, speaking of Toshiba, the parent company to Westinghouse, now they agreed to make payments on this project. The first payment is due in October. Will Toshiba make its payments to Georgia Power and the other owners of Vogtle as promised, you think?
Well, that remains to be seen. They made the commitment. Generally, they would not make a commitment. There's an extraordinary cost associated with it to Toshiba, and they've made that agreement to, in fact, make that payment. Whether they make it or not is one of those milestones that has to happen. I don't believe that the companies or this commission would approve or allow the project to continue if the payments aren't made in a timely fashion or some form thereof.
Chairman Wise, am I understanding you correctly that if this money doesn't come through, that's basically it, the end of Plant Vogtle? Is that what you're saying?
I think that's fair. There may always is an opportunity to review, but I think the monies that come from Toshiba to offset the overruns are key. I think that the risk that the ratepayers, that the companies ultimately take, that this commission reviews, I don't think we could continue the plant if Toshiba does not live up to its guarantees.
And there is no other recourse for any other funding mechanism to come through. This is it.
Well, I think there's clearly the companies have made requests of the DOE on production tax credits, loan guarantees, and the like, but that's outside the realm of this commission, and I think it's appropriate that they do that. And if they do get additional help, that again offsets the cost for the ratepayers. Ultimately, it makes the plant less expensive than it already is going to be and makes it a better deal.
Throughout this conversation, you have really focused on the ratepayers because you feel like that they are owed much more than what's been happening. You know, if you have a message to those who are concerned, basically the ratepayers, what's your message to them?
Well, I believe that the commission is managing the process as best it can. And this is what we will review in the next 6 months of hearings and testimony and review by our own staff as to the appropriateness of the new schedule and the new cost overruns. And one of the things that we have to consider is the fact is that the schedule and the cost have not been met to date. So what's different now?
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps that the partners have overtaken the project from Westinghouse may be a better answer than what we've previously seen, that we'll get more direct information, not from Westinghouse to the company, to the commission, but directly to the commission from the folks that are on site constructing it. But the clear mm-hmm. problem with where we are today, and if we don't continue the plan, is there significant monies have been spent in the last 8 or 9 years that we'll get nothing from. And that's just something that appears to be intolerable to myself and my colleague.
And that significant amount, that's up in the billions.
I think that's fair, yes.
Chairman Wise, as you know, optimism is great. And let's just say, let's look at the glass being half full here, okay? Everything's going to turn out the way you all would like it to turn out. Then let's talk about another completion date. If everything happens the way you all would like it to, do you have a sense, any idea, when the completion of Plant Vogtle would happen?
I think it as proposed by the consortium to date is that it looks like 2021, 2022 are the dates for 3 and 4,
mm-hmm.
and that is something that the company has assured us in the filing that is an accurate schedule and is appropriate with what they know now. They have every bit of information. They have Bechtel on board reviewing all the facts and the figures. Many outside entities have reviewed the project in the last few months to make sure that this project schedule and cost estimates are appropriate. And this is what we will review and have to determine whether it is or is not appropriate in the coming months.
Georgia Public Service Commission Chairman Stan Wise, I always appreciate you all taking the time to keep our listeners updated on what's happening with Plant Vogtle. Thank you so much.
Rose, you are a great service to Atlanta. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Support for WABE comes from Capital One. You can open a Capital One savings account and discover more about Capital One savings online at capitalone.com/reimagineAtlanta. Capital One, welcome to Banking Reimagined.
And from Live Nation, welcoming Alison Krauss and David Gray for one night at Chastain Park Amphitheater on Saturday, September 30th. Tickets on sale now at livenation.com. Alison Krauss and David Gray together at Chastain.
Join WABE and PBA 30 for an exclusive opportunity to get up close and personal with one of the most honored storytellers of our time. Acclaimed historian Dr. Henry Louis Gates will discuss his life and career and share a behind-the-scenes look at the Finding Your Roots television series. Sunday, October 1st at 5 p.m. at the Carter Center. For tickets and more information, visit pba.org/gates or call 678-686-0335.
My name is Emily Tomlinson, and I am from Vine City. I study drawing and painting at Georgia State University. I really like living in Vine City because it's really close to public transportation, as well as Georgia State, where I take classes. The growth of gentrification in the area. It's taking a lot of people out of the city, where a lot of their family is from. With the dome and everything. It's very authentic Atlanta. It's, I think, one of the oldest neighborhoods in Atlanta, and it brings a lot of diversity to the city.
If you missed any part of today's show, we got you. You can catch up on all the interviews you missed at wabe.org/closerlook. And let me know what you think. Tweet me at WABE Rose Scott or send an email to rose@wabe.org. This is member supported 90.1 WABE Atlanta.
On the next Fresh Air.
I remember my knees shaking and I was saying,
holy smokes, I'm going into war. This is war.
We talk with Ken Burns and Lynn Novick about their new PBS documentary series, The Vietnam War, which is told from multiple perspectives, including the North Vietnamese. Join us this afternoon at 2 on 90.1 WABE.
And Closer Look continues now here on 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Rose Scott. Since its founding in 1881, Spelman College has had a mission to educate African-American women.
In a time of black codes and lynching, this school was training African-American women to be leaders in education, in the health professions. In a time of legalized segregation, this school was establishing math and biology departments and training a generation of black women scientists. At a time when many workplaces were filled with not just glass ceilings, but brick walls, this school was urging black women to become doctors and lawyers, engineers, ambassadors. Now that is the story of Spelman College.
Of course, that is former First Lady Michelle Obama giving the commencement address during Spelman's 2011 graduation ceremony. The college's current motto is a choice to change the world. And earlier this month, Spelman College President Dr. Mary Campbell announced a change to the college's admission and enrollment policy. Now, in a letter, Dr. Campbell wrote in part that the college, quote, will consider for admission women students, including students who consistently live and self-identify as women. That's regardless of their gender assignment at birth. Spelman does not admit male students, including students who self-identify and live consistently as men, regardless of gender assignment at birth. Well, when this news came out, there were a lot of reactions. Spelman students reacted to the news on social media and on campus. Here's current senior Victoria Hicks.
I like the decision. I think that, I mean, of course, with anything new, there's going to be some challenges and some struggles, but I think that Spelman took the right step because this is a school for all black women, not just certain type of black women.
We're going to continue the conversation now. And a programming note, Closer Look invited Spelman College President Mary Schmidt Campbell on. The college declined to be a part of today's conversation. But that didn't stop several Spelman alumni, and they're joining me in the studio. Julie Borders, class of 1983, Annette Davis Jackson, class of 1984, and Kia Smith, class of 2004. Welcome, and thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kia, I'm going to start with you since you're the youngin'.
Okay.
Let's begin, and let's go back to your graduation day and what it meant for you at that time to be a Spelman graduate.
It was overwhelming. Thinking about everything that I have taken away from Spelman College and the responsibility that had been beholden to me to go out into the world and represent the things that I had learned there.
Julie, what was that day like for you?
I don't know. It's been so long ago, 83. We're not going to even talk about how many years that was. But I can't say I remember that day specifically, but I can say generally having gone to a majority high school, that being a Spelman student and becoming a Spelman alumni was momentous for me. I'm a third generation, so I'm the granddaughter's club. I'm also a Spelman bride. Had to get rid of that man. But I can't believe I wasted Sister's Chapel on the wrong man. Poor choices sometimes. But just the importance of showing up and showing out as an African-American woman who had formerly been in an environment that for me was rather oppressive and not a very comfortable space. Mm-hmm. The notion that, you know, a place built for me really spoke to me very strongly. And so I think it's only appropriate that Spelman continue to be a place built for whatever student wants to be there and represents herself that way.
We'll get into that in just a moment. Annette, what about you?
Oh, you know, it was exciting for me because I came from West LA, California, where I grew up in a real estate brokerage, and my dad gave me a cashier's check, you know, every semester to pay for my education. But my grandmother said that you're going to go there and you're going to find a husband. And I said, yes. And my grandfather went to Sears and he bought a Parker for me. And he said, do not go down to Georgia and become an educated fool. You're going there because you're part of the leadership of the nation. And so when I saw that within Spelman, I said, look, I am in my rightful place. And also because of the motto of Spelman, not the tagline, a choice to change the world, but the motto and the logo of Spelman is our whole school for Christ. I came to a Christian institution to be the leadership of the nation.
Okay. I can't think of any women's institution, high school or college, where the use of sisterhood is not part of either a colloquial sentiment or even in the school model. I want you all to define sisterhood in terms of the Spelman community, and then I'll let you start.
You know, sisterhood is when we see each other, it's like we hug automatically. It's like, that is my sister. And it is just really so special all around the world. It doesn't matter where you go and you see Spelman and you find out that they're an alum. It's an automatic, it's an automatic, you know, chill raiser, because it's like, that's my sister. I may not have went to school with her physically, but we are so connected. And so that's what the sisterhood meant, that, you know what, we will not betray each other. We're going to be friendly to each other. We're going to support each other. And we're part of a body that has changed the world.
Julie?
I would say a sorority without the hazing. maybe that's not the best way to characterize sororities. But I guess I think of my Spelman experience as very much that way. I feel as though I could go anywhere in the world, and if I could locate maybe on social media, Facebook or whatever, a Spelmanite, I would have a home instantaneously. So what I would say is that it's internally and externally, it's the place called home.
Kia?
Amen.
Sisterhood is what brought me to Spelman College. When I came as a high school senior to Spelbound in April of 2000, and I saw this group of Black women who were supporting and motivating each other, and there wasn't the idea of competing and tearing each other down, but it's just, it's an automatic space of support, motivation, and just love. You have your cheerleaders.
Several all-women's colleges have implemented or revised the new admission policy regarding transgender students, and others have not. So just real quick, I just want to ask you, were you all surprised that Spelman would be implementing their policy starting next year? Surprised there? We'll get into some other stuff, but just were you initially surprised, Annette?
I won't even say surprised. I will say fragmented, flummoxed. You know, I was taken aback. And I was taken aback because we weren't even given a chance to hear what the recommendations are. And I've been following this for 8 months and really been an integral part of it.
Okay, we'll get to that. Julie, were you surprised?
I guess I was somewhat surprised, because in some ways Spelman strikes me as being very traditional, and in other ways as very bleeding edge, I guess. And so sometimes I feel like you never know what to expect. I have to say that I was pleased.
Kia? I would agree. I was pleased. Spelman does have battle of traditional and progressive that you see come to light. However, the founding of Spelman College within itself is a radical mission for two white women to move south to educate former slaves and Black girls is a radical founding in itself. So to see Spelman move forth on this is in line with their values from 1881.
Annette, Spelman will consider admission for women students, including students who consistently live and self-identify as women, regardless of their gender assignment at birth. What do you make of that?
Oh, no. You know, it's a travesty. To me, it's the biggest travesty, because I have children. I have high school children. And what this sends to the nation is that this type of behavior is okay. And I go back to 1881.
Define behavior.
Behavior, it's an alternate behavior, which the transgender community is pushing on America to really be seen. And from me doing the research and being a part of this 8 months and wanting to find out what is the research, what I found out is the Human Rights Commission has been targeting historically Black colleges to put this policy in place. Howard University, Agnes Scott, a lot of the girl colleges, so they've been targeted. And Howard University is now suffering financially because of the policy that they put in place. So I am not for it. I am here today because I'm like on a quest to reverse the policy, number one, because it didn't go to the stakeholders, which is of the Spelman community. And I believe it's really a betrayal of Dr. Smith to facilitate this. Dr. Beverly Tatum started to facilitate this. She tried to finish it. And then Dr. Tatum comes from Mount Holyoke, which Mount Holyoke started this. So I did the historical research, and I'm not for it because you will have now men who are at Spelman College. I was just on a recent program and with a transgender who was female, pledged Delta, end up being male. And he didn't talk about education. I mean, they didn't talk about education. They just talked about the transgender issue. And nobody's talking about education. And I want to preserve the foundation of Spelman and its precepts of our whole school for Christ.
Julie, you heard what Annette said. What do you think?
I did. And it's kind of interesting because, Rose, you know that I was interested in having my aunt, who is my second generation Spelmanite relative, come. And she is an ordained minister. And she hearkened back to our whole school for Christ. She says, as long as they don't change that. But one point that she did make was with regard to the legality of it and seeing what we saw in the Carolinas with the whole bathroom thing. Mm-hmm. I guess my thought is two things, that it's the legal thing to do, but that it's also the right thing to do. I was watching an episode of Atlanta, the one that won the Emmy on Sunday.
Donald Glover's Atlanta.
And it was an episode that actually dealt with transgender with Paperboy. Mm-hmm. And Paperboy thinking it was a joke and sure. This is craziness. But it dealt in part with, the spoof was transracial. Mm-hmm. But the person who was being transgender, his transracial thing, he said, well, we all know that race is a social construct. Now, in some ways, the way we think of ourselves as male and female, that's social construct as well. So I think we're just looking at a different construct right now.
Kia, you talked about Spelman having a legacy of being radical, being a part of change. So when you hear what Annette, her viewpoint is, but also the legacy of the school, how the school was founded, who founded the school, the mission of the school that involves the word Christ, and we could have a whole another discussion about that. But what comes to your mind when you think about all that and the fact that she says, look, you know, we're still missing something here as it relates to the history of Spelman?
Well, our whole school for Christ is important to me as well. I'm a seminary student right now. So when I think about Christ, I think about his radical work advocating for marginalized people. And Annette brought up the education of Spelman College. Enrolling transgender students is not going to forfeit Spelman's educational mission. If anything, it becomes more inclusive and more diverse and more rich because you have these valuable viewpoints coming in and enabling people to see different perspectives.
Spelman does not admit male students, including students who self-identify and live consistently as men, regardless of their gender assignment at birth, which means their gender assignment is still female. We're talking physical aspects and all that, but they identify as male, they will not be admitted. Some see that as unfair. What are your thoughts on that?
I think I'm not sure that a student who self-identifies as male would want to initially enroll at Spelman. I understand that students who are come there as female and transition, mm-hmm. While they're there, will be allowed to stay, and I think that's a great thing. It gives them stability. And I don't think people are really understanding the stress and strain that comes with transferring schools. Mm-hmm. So it gives them stability. And it respects their time and their financial investment in being a part of the Spelman community.
Julie? Is that unfair, that part of the new policy?
I think it's consistent. It's logical. I was a math major. And so for me, that is perfectly logical. If you're saying, if you self-identify as female, regardless of your birth, gender identification, that it would only make sense that, because again, in many, many ways, what we think of as feminine and masculine are social construct. If we lived in a society that was matriarchal, it could be that, I don't know, men were being an oppressed people, and you would maybe want to have schools that were just for men so that they wouldn't be oppressed. But since the gender is a construct, I think it only makes sense for us to have this special audience of people with their own support system. And by the way, I do hope that in the future that the transgender folks will have not just sort of support groups and whatever, but also physical spaces that are safe spaces on Spelman's campus.
Annette, a woman who was admitted and transitioned to male while a student at Spelman will be allowed to continue. You have said you wanted to make it your mission to reverse
Absolutely.
This policy. Can you understand the counter, someone saying, well, back up, because the whole point of historically black colleges and universities were because African Americans were not allowed in certain colleges and universities, so you are advocating for another oppressive application?
I'm not saying it. Well, you can't even say that, because there is no oppression in my body, and as far as Spelman College, there is no oppression. I believe in the construct of our whole school for Christ. There were two Christian missionaries who founded Spelman, and then when they saw Rockefeller, he saw, wow, this is a great thing to have a school. We had a school for women and girls, which mm-hmm. was fantastic. We had education department, we had nursing, we had teaching, and what Spelman has done, I'm a former college coach at Spelman. I was the first golf coach for Spelman, and I helped write the proposal for Spelman to get into the NCAA mm-hmm. with the athletic director, Dr. Dorothy Ritchie. She was the first female athletic director in the country to head co-ed programs. So what Spelman has done is slowly got rid of the foundation. They got rid of the education department, they got rid of the child development department, which could lead into educating and training the teachers. Hold on. And so when you look at this, and then you look at this transgender policy, you say that what it is, to me, it's a total betrayal to why we were founded in the first place. And because the school decided to leak this to the media and not come to the alumni and say, here are our recommendations for the transgender policy.
Let me ask you all this. How often does Spelman come to the alumni and ask for input on policies or what have you? Do they do that often?
They do. They're pretty good about delivering information.
But they had a task force.
Yeah. But even if they have a task force, and I've talked to the head of the task force, I've been dealing with this for probably about 8 months. And when I asked for the minutes to the task force, exactly what were you guys talking about? They said that we couldn't deliver it. I presented an open records request and an open meetings request to find out exactly what are you doing, what are your recommendations. They said that we could not tell you. I asked for a meeting with President Campbell, because I said, look, you got rid of sports, so you got rid of the Title IX under sports. And then so because of that, and you have a number of Spelmanites who are number one, number two in track and field, and volleyball, and athletics. I played collegiate tennis at Spelman, so I was a tennis player and a golfer. I played golf all my life. So you get rid of that, and then what you do, you push Title IX with the transgender. So to me, it's a plot that thickens. We didn't even know, and I have really uncovered that it was something that probably started with the previous president, and it ended up being in her lap. And so this is like the first major announcement that she's done. And I don't care for it. And I just want to lift up my voice to the Spelmanites and the Christian evangelicals and the women and men around the country who care to say that our kids will not be infiltrated with this debauchery.
Kia, response?
I believe in alums' right to say what they need to. A couple of years ago, I got together with some of our Spelman sisters and Morehouse brothers, and we got together a group, Spellhouse Against Rape, to mm-hmm. discuss their implementations around Title IX and sexual assault. I also believe it is that at some point we have to trust the people who are running Spelman College. We do not know everything. We do not have all the answers. And I say this as someone who has also worked at Spelman College in their Office of Communications. So we don't have all the parts of the puzzle. And Spelman is not going to come to us for every policy. What they did do is they came and they got our input when it was time for a president. And we were allowed to give all this feedback. And at some point, we have to trust the leadership in place. And if we have issues, go to them, but we can and voice those concerns. But to expect them to come and consult Alam, who is a diverse body of people within themselves, is just unrealistic.
True.
I actually had to go back and do some research because I didn't recall having been contacted about an issue that I thought was very, very important. Mm-hmm. If you look at it as maybe this actually in some way changes the mission of the college or the target market that the school is built for, correct? So when I went back, it looked as though I had overlooked an email. Now, the email had a whole bunch of other stuff in it. And sort of towards the bottom, we're going to create this task force. They also, I think, did some surveying. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen the survey. The communication also included some resources about transgender issues. So when I look back at it, first I was kind of offended that a decision had been made and my voice wasn't heard, even though when I looked at the decision, I was happy with mm-hmm. the decision that was made. But I knew that there would be people who weren't happy with it and would perhaps feel as though they didn't get a voice. And so I looked at what had the process been. Now, what I will say is that I do regularly get those calls for soliciting money.
Okay.
So if I could get a call okay. about critical decisions as that's often right. as I get a call about some money,
that's right.
I would be straight. You see what I'm saying? I'm just not even straight. I'd be straight. And I understand. Now, see, part of, and those two things are related too in a way, because think about it this way. If this basically is the law of the land, I understand. Anybody could object for whatever their reasons. But if it's the law of the land, in our current environment, it's a little questionable, but it could become a question of funding from federal agencies, other agencies, governmental agencies. Now, I don't know what percentage of Spelman's funding comes from those sources.
What about private? Are you concerned about private
people withdrawing?
You know, or philanthropic partnerships that might go away, that, you know, from institutions that
I would
issue.
Say, again,
but do you trust that Spelman could handle that? Do y'all trust that Spelman could handle
I
that?
I don't know. I am hoping that an impact analysis was completed. But if you look at it, the way I'm looking at it is as the right thing to do, then you would just say, let the chips fall where they may, because this is the right thing to do. Now, if you don't think it's the right thing to do, then you do need to go into that whole analysis is of who is going to cut me off, you know, evangelical, whoever is going to cut me off because of this decision. How many alums? And that should have been a question that was included in the survey. Will your financial support continue? Because I don't know if organizationally Spelman surveyed funders mm-hmm. to find out where they were, or if it was like, in my heart of hearts, I know this is the right thing to do. We're going to solicit some feedback, but I kind of know what we're going to do. I don't know.
I don't believe that they surveyed funder. And thank you for bringing up the organizational part, because you're a Spelmanite. You're brilliant. And you are brilliant too, Kia. You know, but I don't believe they surveyed organizationally across the board in the community, number one, within the stakeholders. It could be the teachers. It could be the Spelmanites. It could be the people, the vendors to Spelman. So I don't believe that they did that. And as far as impact statement, and I know that for a fact, because, like I said, I've been involved in sending letters or whatever. Sure. And
I don't understand why they would not have shared with you the task force findings.
And they told me that they could not. And I asked for a meeting. And I tell you, we weren't able to meet because I was in Los Angeles. They finally had a date. It was just probably maybe like about 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. That next week, they produced all this information to the media. And really, that's a betrayal.
Yeah, that's,
you know, that's the biggest betrayal.
You said you
ever.
Keep saying they leaked it to the media. There was a letter that was on the website that went out to the community.
But let me go
she's
further.
The decision's made.
This decision's made. So you can't, first of all, this is a leak too, because this letter right here, it doesn't substantiate not getting or having a connection with the alumni to say these are the recommendations. Before this letter, it should have been a letter saying these are the recommendations from the policy committee. What do you think about these? Let's do another survey.
It seems to me that a town hall meeting sort of this could have been a tour for Dr. Campbell. What's interesting about it to me, and you know, hindsight is 2020 or 2015, is that as part of being a new president, one of the things that could have been considered is her having listening sessions about this issue specifically, because this is a very, very important decision. And I'm sure she didn't take it lightly, but if many alumni feel the way we do, which is kind of left out, Kia saying, well, we're trusting the leadership to do the right thing. I'm saying I overlooked the email, but it was kind of buried in the email.
I don't trust the leadership.
Okay, well, let's go here, because we've got about 4.5 minutes left, and I want to give you all a party.
I know.
It goes fast, doesn't it? But just listen.
Okay, Auntie Rose.
From your viewpoint, will Spelman's new transgender and gender identity policies, does it negate or take away from this institution's longstanding mission to educate women with the focus of women from the African diaspora? Is any of that lost with this new policy? Annette, you start.
Oh, absolutely. Everything is lost, because then you create that can of worms that's open. You open up a door, and we haven't had this door open since 1881. So you put a different spin on things, and I believe that it's a plotted spin, just as well it was plotted to discriminate against African Americans in America. So to me, I'm very concerned at the carrot that's driving this. And I did the research, and I found out that the Human Rights Commission is targeting historically Black colleges. And I think that we would really be mindful, given we started this great school for women and girls, and now we're changing the scenario. And this issue is not right for our kids, because I want women to grow up as women, males, and if you want to be separated, be separated. Do something different.
Julie.
I am... despite the fact that maybe I'm not that crazy about the process of the decision making, I'm pleased with the outcome, and I look forward to having the implementation be as smooth as possible. I think that there's always that balance between progressive and preservation, right? We even have it with gentrification when we look at neighborhoods, right? Mm-hmm. You have to have a balance between the two. You can't be what you've always been, because you'll croak. And so I think this is part of being who you are, and there's still going to be a preservation of that which we probably consider feminine, because, as I said, feminine to me is mostly a social construct.
Okay. Kia?
I think it enriches our sisterhood. Our sisterhood is strong. It is over 125 years old. And diversity and inclusion can only enrich that and make it that much more valuable and special.
And I want to say this, you can't have infiltration.
Well, but everyone has got their last word, so okay. We're always fair on this program. Annette Davis-Jackson, class of 1984, Julie Borders, class of 1983, Keegan Smith, class of 2004, Spelmanites, thank you all for coming in and taking the time.
You're welcome. Thank you, Rose, for having us.
Thank you.
And discussing the topic.
Support for WABE comes from Comcast Business. Comcast is committed to providing dependable internet service for businesses who depend on it. Comcast Business, internet, voice, and TV, built for business. And from Northside Hospital, offering clinical excellence across a full range of medical specialties, leading-edge technologies and treatments, and the personalized, compassionate care that you expect from Northside. Information at northside.com.
I'm Danielle Deadweiler. I live in Grant Park. I like the family quality of the neighborhood. I like that the Grant Park is central, the activity of the community. I think I would like to challenge the community to have more diversity, economically as well as culturally. I'm from Atlanta, born and raised, and so I know that this community used to look very different. It was perhaps more Black. It was, it had a different kind of cultural flair, and to see it shift and to not include the people who were here is difficult and challenging. Everybody should bear witness to the fruits of a changing community, not just those who come in, those who were present.
Community issues are what drives the conversations here on Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. Tell me what's happening where you live. Send an email to rose@wabe.org. Again, that's rose@wabe.org. This is member-supported 90.1 WABE Atlanta.
Support for WABE comes from the University of Georgia in Gwinnett. You can earn your graduate degree while working full-time. More about UGA's programs for working professionals at the Gwinnett Campus Open House on October 21st. Gwinnett.uga.edu.
When you're catching up on the day's news, the headlines are a good place to start. But to really understand the world and what's happening, you want the full story. All Things Considered takes the time to explore the details and differences to find meaning in the day's biggest stories. Stand with the facts. Listen every day. Join us weekday afternoons from 4 until 6:30 for All Things Considered here on 90.1 WABE.
And Closer Look continues now here on 90.1 WABE. I'm Rose Scott. In the fall of 1993, Marguerite Burundi-Kise was living in the African country of Burundi. She was born there in a city located in the eastern part of the country. You may know that from 1993 to 2005, there was a civil war in Burundi. There were ethnic divisions between two tribes that resulted in the deaths of nearly 300,000 people. Marguerite escaped, and she helped to rescue nearly 30,000 children. She's a keynote speaker at Emory University's 21 Days of Peace program, which is held in honor of the day, International Day of Peace. And Marguerite joins me now in studio. It's a pleasure. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Tell me about your homeland. What was it like? What are your memories of your homeland as a child?
Yes, it took, for me, it's a paradise.
Paradise.
Burundi, for me, I remember my family, my grandfather. All my, I have so many uncles and aunts. And it was peaceful until I was a teenager, 16 years old, in 1972, when the war began between Hutu and Tutsi.
Did you understand growing up what all that was about, the ethnic divisions with the tribes? Did you understand what that was all about as a young child?
It's so strange because in Burundi, Hutu and Tutsi have the same language, live in the same village, and we are all Christian. We are 80% in Burundi Christian people. And my mom taught me that we are children of God. Then I can't understand. It's why I stood up when I was 16 years, and everybody said, but are you crazy? What are you doing? I said, I will become a teacher. I will teach and raise my pupils in love and compassion.
You went to France to study to become a teacher, and then you went back home. Did you think that would be dangerous?
Why? We are one human family. If we keep silence, if we see our brothers and sisters and children killed, and we don't want to do something, when we will die, what we will say to St. Peter Mm-hmm. When he will ask us, what have you done when they were killing? Mm-hmm. And this is for me to risk my life in order to achieve my noble vocation. It's to love. We are created to love, to distribute happiness, not to sit there like in cemetery and say, okay, for me, I have enough to eat. I am in USA. No, we must stand up. And this is what I want to tell. And I thanks to Asike, these women sisters, African sisters, who invited me to express, to show that when women move, then the world moves.
I have heard that before.
Yeah.
Let's talk about you and helping these children escape this conflict. How did this work? What were you doing?
It was craziness. Of course, my family, they said, you lost your mind. you are crazy. I have no home, no money, but I have love. And love makes us inventor. In 2000, I have more than 251 babies. Everybody, journalists came and asked me, oh, are you crazy? How you will feed those children? I said, I am a Christian. I know that God will feed. How he fed mm-hmm. more than 5,000 people. Mm-hmm. He can also help me. And I have babies. I have child soldiers. Mm-hmm. I have former children from jail, mm-hmm. Children with conflict with the law. I have AIDS children, but always blessing. People call me, people come to help me, and I got many awards and I got money. So I built a hospital, swimming pool, bank.
So support, so you're getting financial support, but how did you physically, how did y'all move these kids? How did you move these children out of the conflict?
Those children who had suffered, first, I told them that they are not victims. Mm-hmm. They can be the actor for their future. Some came with missionaries.
Okay.
They brought me those children. The other, it's UNICEF who called me. Mm-hmm. The other, it's UNHCR. They were refugee children. When the genocide in Rwanda broke, mm-hmm. All the humanitarian NGO brought all those children.
So
then I said, okay, all militaries brought me children. All rebellion, even robbers. Give me the children.
So the rebels would bring you the children as well. So you had the help of the NGOs and the rebels. You had a lot of people helping to get these children to you.
Yes, because everybody, even one day I remember that it was an American NGO who found a very wounded child. Mm. And they came and they said, please, we hear that you can even take those children who are going to die. I said, but those children, they are angels. Mm-hmm. And those children, for me, even they will die after 5 minutes. They will die in the hand of a mom. And I can accompany them in dignity. And they can die with love, not abandoned.
When you think back to your homeland and you called it a paradise and Burundi still has some conflict now, what is your hope for this country that one day it will return to that paradise that you remember?
What I am doing now in Kigali, I create oasis of peace, a community center where I am trying to restore lives for those young people. We mm-hmm. have so many young in Africa. You have young people who can stand up. I hope that those young people, I send them in university. Mm-hmm. If they are good educated, then they will be good leaders. The only hope for me is education. Mm-hmm. If we educate those young, then they will be a new generation who will break this cycle of violence. And I am full of hope because I know that love will always take the last word. And with those young, we will win. So we have already won in Oasis of Peace.
The youth will be the future leaders, is what you're saying. When you think about International Day of Peace, and you're going to give this keynote speech at Emory, what's your message going to be?
We must, of course, I am Maison Shalom. Then it's my feast. For me, this morning, I know. And people must know the only gift we can offer to the world is a peace. And it's possible. It's possible because we are one human family to distribute happiness and peaceful. And God give us this peace. And we must not forgive to give to our world those gifts, peace.
Marguerite, thank you so much for coming in and taking the time. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, my sister.
Listening to Closer Look. If you missed any of today's conversation, catch up on our website at wabe.org/closerlook. Again, wabe.org/closerlook. Also, we want to hear from you. Send our host, Rose Scott, an email at rose@wabe.org. This is 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR.
My name is Ann Nguyen, and I live in Stone Mountain. I like the shops. I like artists from there. I like the attractions and Stone Mountain Park. They have activities for kids. You know, they can practice and familiarize themselves with art, like pottery, painting. If I could change one thing about Stone Mountain, it would be traffic jam. It's really bad there.
And that's it for today's edition of Closer Look, which is produced by Candace Wheeler, Ebony Lemon, and Finley Fox. And our engineer is Elizabeth Eads. Our executive producer is Christine Dempsey. As always, we thank the entire WABE news team, as well as Public Broadcasting Atlanta's digital services crew. We're back tomorrow at 1 for another edition of Closer Look. If you missed any of today's show, you can find the entire program online at wabe.org/closerlook. And you know you can listen to Closer Look weeknights at 9 p.m. Stay tuned to 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Rose Scott.